Time. You may be asking, who is this not very funny ponytailed guy up here on the stage? My name is Greg Shields. I'm an MVP with Microsoft. I have a vExpert with VMware and a CTP from Citrix. More importantly, I am a senior partner with a company called Concentrated Technology. If you have ever read a magazine article, a white paper, or attended a webinar, you have probably seen me at some point in the past. I've done about a gazillion of these things at a time. There is my contact information down on the bottom. Let's get to know each other. So we're here to talk about VMM, and we're here also to talk about remote desktop services. The point behind, if you're coming in just now, the point behind this session is to leave you with something that is immediately usable. You can go home right now today and do everything that I show you. You can implement it right now. You can say, hey boss, look how I paid for this entire conference by coming to this one session. Thank you, Greg. You're welcome. So let's start, but let's backpedal just a second, okay? Let's backpedal to the whole why we're here. You know, there's this thing called cloud. First of all, what a stupid name for a technology, right? You know, we're all IT pros here, right? We're IT pros. We deal with things in binary, right? Is it on or is it off? Is it black or is it white? Is it red? Is it green? Is it working? Is it not working? And then for the marketing people to call something cloud, it just makes our brains reboot, right? Have you been confused about cloud? When someone approaches you and talks about private cloud or public cloud or all these different cloud type technologies, do you feel like you just don't understand what they're talking about? Well, it's the case kind of everywhere, right? It's been a very challenging part of the implementation of this sort of method of operations is because cloud just doesn't really grok with our sort of zeros and ones view of the world. Well, we are now, for the first time in many, many years, starting to get to the point where cloud is beginning to make sense to us. Part of it is Microsoft said, you know what, all this marketing fluff is just silly. How about, why don't we just create a button for that? Right, so after years of people trying to tell us in vague terms what cloud was, Microsoft said, you know what, we got a button for that in VMM. Click this create cloud button, bam, you got a cloud. Now, if you played with VMM before, you know that creating a cloud and clicking that button is something that you do after you assemble all the components. And it's not my job here today to tell you how to assemble those components. There are other sessions to do that. My assumption here is that you have already done that, and that even if you don't have a cloud, you at least have some servers that are sitting on top of VMM, some hypervisors that are sitting on top of VMM, and that are probably running some virtual machines. Does this describe you? Right? Or does this describe something you intend to do or hope to do in the near to medium term future? Right? No, none of you are interested in that at all. I'll warn you, I tend to be an interactive presenter, and I will occasionally use a Socratic method, which means I will just point at you and ask a question. So pay attention. All right? So even with this new button, right? With this new button mark create cloud, it's still kind of confusing. Who here's seen the button? Right? Have you seen the button in VMM? Have you clicked the button in VMM? You have not clicked the button in VMM. Has anybody clicked the button in VMM? Have you successfully navigated through the subsequent wizard that ensues? I'm not entirely sure how to get this far, right? Anybody else? Has anybody clicked all the way through the button to get to the end? No one. Oh, my God. Well, part of the reason, one guy in the back, right on, we are one out of 250 on that button. Well, part of the problem here is the fact that a lot of us still just don't understand why the heck I need to click the button. I've got a virtual environment, right? I've got virtual machines. Why in the heck do I need a cloud? And that's a completely understandable and completely worthwhile question. When I have this cloud that the button then creates, how is that different than the virtualization that I already have? Right? When do I actually have a private cloud? And when I have one, what the heck am I going to do with it? Are these questions you've asked yourself? Why do I even really care about this? Well, the interesting thing is that a cloud, and this is something that you should just kind of put in the back of your mind, the notion of private cloud is not a technology. Private cloud is not a technology. It's not a thing that you can put your finger on. It's not something you can necessarily see and feel and touch, because private cloud is a way of thinking. And that's what I hope to show you here in over the next series of slides. When you have a private cloud, it's not so much that you have clicked the button, although you have, it's that your thinking has evolved to cloud-like thinking. Okay? At the conclusion of this, you will have what you need in order to think cloud-like. Now, if you are finding yourself still confused about what even cloud-like thinking is, that's completely understandable. The problem with private cloud, at least today, as you sort of look through the material that exists out on the internet, right, has anybody here Googled, or excuse me, Binged out on the internet to figure out what private cloud is? Right, have you done that? You know what, I'm gonna go see what this private cloud stuff is. And I Google, or Bing around to, it's really hard to get that verb out of your language. And you bing around to try to figure it out, and you find that, well, in the pie chart of stuff on the internet, you got pretty much two halves of stuff on the internet. About 70% of it is how to build a private cloud, right? You've seen these articles from TechTarget or from Virtualization Review on how to build a private cloud repeated over and over and over and over again. And then the other half is now that you got it, well, here's how you use it to create a web service. Woohoo! Right? Is this exciting? Not really, right? So if I build a private cloud, all right, well then what? Great, this is how I build a private cloud, but it's not very aspirational. You haven't told me why I need it. Well, all right, if I have one and I create a web service, great, but that's not something I necessarily do. So the problem with private cloud is that it's awesome for developers. It's even awesomer if you're a tester. But all the content on the internet does almost nothing for we IT pros. Do you agree? Can I get an amen? Amen. All right. So, this is a view of a web service, right? This is something you may have seen online. This view of this web service here is from the VMM Service Template Designer. And in it, it looks very complicated, but in fact, it's not very complicated at all. At the top, we just have this little box here that does nothing other than name the service. Okay? And below that, I have three different what we call machine tiers here, a database tier, a web tier, and an app tier that correspond to the servers between 1 and n that may exist or may not exist in that tier. We've all heard of the classic N-tier web service thing, right? I got a web server, the web tier connects to the app tier connects to the database tier. Well, that's what all the content is. And down at the bottom, we've got NICs down there that connect up into my virtual infrastructure through some load balancer. So this is awesome, again, if I'm a developer. If I'm a developer, or if I'm, more importantly, if I'm a tester, having this predetermined, proscribed template that exists somewhere in a catalog enables me as a tester to redeploy things whenever I want. Back to our question about rebuilding RDS servers, right? You need to do it once in a while. But if I'm building a web service, how often do I need to rebuild the entire environment to test something? Relatively soon. Anybody here an IT person that supports developers? Anyone? Are they annoying or what? Yes. You get a phone call every morning. Yeah, we got to rerun the, we got the, what do they call that, the drop? Yeah, we've run the drop, and the VOB has got the code, and we need to stick it into the test environment so we can run a test, and then this afternoon we need to rebuild the whole thing again. Well, in the old days, it would require a lot of effort and a lot of ghost for us to do that. But with a private cloud, the private cloud says, you know what, if I put this proscribed service in a catalog, the developer themselves or the tester themselves can select my three-tier service. It can expose that template. They can name it, you know what, I'm running through test round number 9380-54. And once I've named the service, I can do whatever individual configurations that I require for the web tier, for the app tier, and for the database tier. This eliminates, if you're dealing with developers, this eliminates you from this process entirely. That should be awesome, right? It is awesome. And that's where, when you go on the web and you see all this content, that's really what Microsoft is focusing on almost exclusively because they're a company of developers. So this is nice, right? But it does nothing for most of us IT pros. So I took it upon myself, in scouring the internet, both on the G1 and on the B1, both of those search engines, to try to find any other service template out there, and came up with almost nothing. Have you played with the service template designer in VMM at all? Have you? What's your experience so far? I hear a but. Takes a minute. The service template designer, I was talking with one of the leads of engineering for Microsoft, just sitting out there in the hall before this presentation. And I said, you know what, when I first was introduced to VMM, I hated it. I absolutely hated the tool. But then the more time that I spent with it, the more I realized that buried kind of underneath the surface of this tool is some real brilliant automations that you don't get with Hyper-V alone, which you don't get with some of the other tools that are out there alone. And so you kind of have to push through that initial kind of revulsion to the tool in order to get onto the other side, where you can find how these automations can be brought into play. That's why I decided to cloudify something relevant. So I said to myself, all right, I need, number one, an IT service that, so, this isn't going to be something that you only install one time, right? I mean, how often do you install, I don't know, your DNS server? Not that often, right? How often do you install an Exchange server? Not that often, right? So having a template that allows you to rapidly deploy Exchange probably isn't the best use for a template, perhaps. So I needed something that needs to be rebuilt regularly. I needed something that, when it gets rebuilt, it's a really good idea to just rapidly deploy it, right? Because I want this process done so I can go home. But I also want something that can prove to me what some of the tenets of cloud computing are, right? What are the tenets of cloud computing? Big fancy words like elasticity, and agility, burstability, scalability, all the abilities, right? And self-service. So I wanted something that I could potentially scale out because I needed to, and something I also wanted to scale in because I needed to. Further, I need something that, well, if it's easy to just do this manually, this is a really stupid activity, right? So that's why I came up with RDS. It seems to fit all those things, and it also happens to be in my MVP, so I know a lot about it. But RDS is kind of a really smart service that makes sense to deploy into a cloud. Let's think about RDS, right? So RDS is one of those services that, well, it always needs rebuilding, right? Right? You've always got users in there that are like, hey, check it out. What happens if I delete these C drive or whatever? It happens. And when it always needs rebuilding, well, it's a major pain in the armpit. Because when I rebuild it, I've got to go and install all the applications and go through all that nightmarish configuration to get it locked down again so that the C drive can't be formatted. So it's a big, long series of steps that I have to go through. Well, I occasionally, with RDS servers, also need more of them, right? You ever have, in where you live, I don't know, a snowstorm? Right? And when it snows, what do people not want to do? They don't want to go to work. So what do? They do dishes and clean the house. I mean, work from home. Right? You know how that works. I'm working from home today. Well, when it snows, you know, in normal operations, before it snows, maybe your two RDS servers are fine, but whatever, you've got 3 feet of snow on the ground and every single person is trying to connect in, well, you've got a problem, right? So you need more servers in order to support the load. Well, in addition, you also sometimes need less of them. But what happens the day after when all snow melts? You've just incorporated VM sprawl into your virtual environment, right? You have this ability to create the machines. Well, I need to get rid of the machines to free up the resources whenever I'm done. Anybody here experience VM sprawl? What's the solution for VM sprawl? randomly delete VMs. Right? Don't do that. Yeah, that's the official Microsoft recommendation, right? Well, so if I have a solution in place that allows me to remove these, then I'm not going to end up with something that is ever growing and never shrinking back. So I spent 4 weeks, literally 4 weeks, in building this this service template. And the reason why it took so long was in creating one that was simple enough that might not solve all of your problems, but it was something that I could tell you in 75 minutes or less that you could go back home, implement, and automatically begin adding your own business rules in, and your own workflow, and your own logic to make it work for you. This is the result of that activity. What you have here is, at the top, the nice little box that just describes what the service is. In this case, it's an RDS, scalable RDS service. And then I also have two, what you see here, tiers, two machine tiers that correspond to two of the different kind of pieces of the VMM service template that I'm creating. The first tier is one I have very delightfully named the initial host tier. Now, can anyone guess what this does? It installs the first server, okay? Now, it installs the first server separate from the scale-out tier for one reason, and one reason only. Can you tell me what that is? Right. There are a lot of roles that make up remote desktop services, right? There's the role that we used to call terminal services, right? That's RDSH. And then there's all these supporting roles that are out there. There's the web access role. There's the connection broker role. There's the session host is another one there. There's the remote access gateway, or the remote desktop gateway role out there as well. And so I separated these out into two different tiers in order to split out the roles to make things easy. Okay? You might be asking, all right, well, this is great, but why two tiers? Two tiers were implemented in this because of some of the changes, as we were talking about just before the session started here, some of the changes that Microsoft has incorporated into Windows with Windows Server 2012. Let's go back to 2008. Right? When you installed terminal services, remote desktop services in 2008, you had a bunch of roles you installed, and then you had to go through this really nightmarish manual process to connect all the roles. You had to put that one group in another group, and you had to go and say, okay, remote desktop web access, here's your connection broker, and connection broker, here are your terminal servers, and all those extra steps that, do you remember these steps? Well, in Server 2012, they've done things that make this whole process quite a bit easier. I have to go through here in the add roles and features wizard and actually create a standard deployment. That standard deployment can be either a virtual machine or session-based deployment. But what it effectively does is it automates the interconnection of all these roles. So what it spits out at the end of the process is a deployment that includes all the necessary bits. Once I finish this running through this wizard, I have a fully functioning remote desktop services infrastructure, correct? Well, that's both good and bad. It's good because everything's easily done. But it's bad because I can't just simply go and install a bunch of roles onto a Windows Server instance and have everything work. No, I have to go through this separate series of steps, this extra process to create an RDS deployment and to create an RDS collection if I'm to make the thing work. This I have to include if I want to create a fully functioning service template. So that's the reason for creating this initial host tier that includes RDSH, that includes RDWA, and includes RDCB, because these three roles are exactly equal to the three roles that you see right there that get aggregated whenever I run through the wizard. Does this make sense to everyone? Right? Is anyone here not gotten this far? Cool. Because now we're going to take this and go way over there. So, all right, I have this beautiful service. The next step I want to do is cloudify it. That's what we're here for, right? I want to be able to, you know, create this thing and be able to deploy it out in a way that makes life easier for me because I'm about to go through a bunch of steps in order to do that. What do you need? Obviously, you need VMM, okay? Right? Because VMM is going to be the solution that allows me to accomplish that. But you also need some other things as well. You need optionally a private cloud. You don't have to click the cloud button to get this far, but it makes things nice and easy. You're going to need a VM template. Does anybody here have VM templates sitting around in your environment, right? Pretty basic VMM templates, probably right off of the DVD, I'm guessing. Maybe a couple of changes, you know, add some updates to it. Maybe you put your corporate background on it or something, but it's generally just a basic template that just is right out of the box for Windows. Why do you have those? Why do you have those? Yeah, right, that's how virtualization has worked since its beginnings. I have a template, and I right-click the template and say clone from template, and then modify the template, add it to the domain, change the name, and all those activities that I need in order to customize that machine to create another VM. Well, you already have that VM template. You're going to use it here in a slightly different way. You also need a tiny bit of PowerShell, which I will give you here shortly. Very tiny bit of PowerShell. And then the last piece of this is going to be the VMM service template. Now, VMM service template is nothing more than, at its core, it's nothing more than an XML document, more or less. Right? It is a series of instructions that when you go and hit the deploy button, it runs those instructions in the proper order in order to create that thing which you have envisioned inside of the template designer. So our goal here is, with nothing more than that VM template and that tiny bit of PowerShell, is to assemble all of these building blocks together so that when I hit the deploy button, it's going to create the RDS environment that I want out of whole cloth, out of nothing. The end result is RDS. Does this make sense? What is this like? What is this like? Say that again really loud. Let me ask you a question. So who here thinks of themselves as like a server person, server guy, server gal? I'm a server gal. Right? Couple of hands. Who here thinks they're like the desktop person? I'm a desktop person. Right? So desktop people. Server people, close your ears. Don't you hate it that the server people have always been like top of the food chain now for just like the entirety of IT's history? You know what I'm talking about? We desktop people have been languishing back in the dark corners, quietly automating things, because those server cats, right, they've got like six machines they're responsible for, you know? We desktop people, we've got like, I don't know, 6,000 machines we're responsible for. So if something goes wrong, what do? You re-image it. And you've got to do 6,000 of them, so you don't just manually right-click and choose copy from template. What do? You create an automation for deploying out these desktops. Private cloud, this is my new, and I love this analogy. Private cloud is to servers what the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit was for desktops. Think about that for a minute. When people began implementing either Config Manager or the... What does that mean? Yeah, no, that actually happened once. My mom called it one of these. I actually picked up too, and it was funny. When you have that, you can assemble all of those building blocks together to create that instance that you're trying to deploy. And that's what we're doing here within VMM. Here I have, for example, a VM template that I created, basic out-of-the-box VM template. With that, I can go into the VMM service template designer. I can give myself a name of the template I'm creating. I create a blank template. There's that beautiful little box right there that says what the service is. And then once I do that, I add in what we call a machine tier. This machine tier allows me to start with a VM template, a virtual machine template, that I then want to customize. With that virtual machine template, I identify which deployment order I want to put it in, which servicing order I want to put it in, and I give it a name. Now here's where VMM gets exciting. Because inside of VMM, I can take an existing VM template and then further customize it via the use of a hardware profile. So maybe in this case, I want to use a static IP instead of a dynamic, or I want to remove the spoofing of MAC addresses on here so that because I don't need that. This says, all right, this is the piece of hardware that I'm going to deploy. Maybe I want to change to two procs instead of one. Now, down here under the guest OS profile is where things get even more interesting. The guest OS profile is equivalent to, can anyone name the name? Sysprep. This is the customization phase that Sysprep uses to take a generalized VM template, one that is this is it's like a stem cell, right? It can turn into any kind of server. Well, this provides the information that tells this what kind of server it wants to be. I can give it a name. I can put it in a domain. I can add the different roles that I want. All the stuff that customized this server. Now, built into VMM is a fairly not well understood and fairly not well known capability that makes these service templates even more extensible. And that is the use of what are called variables. We've all heard of variables before, right? Well, a variable in VMM allows me to create these service templates in a way that I can define certain characteristics at the moment of deployment. Here I have a computer name, right? You'll see I've paused this, this demo at the computer name definition. A little bit later on, I'm going to want to know what the host name is of this initial server tier. I got to know what that host name is because I'm going to need to plug it into a PowerShell command that's going to ask for what's the name of your RD connection broker. Well, built into VMM is the ability not to define a hard machine name, but instead to actually give the machine a variable name surrounded by the at sign here. This at sign says RDS initial server host name at sign. When I then go to deploy out this service template, in order to deploy it, I'll have to actually plug in the host name that will get deployed to this machine. Aha! Suddenly these things get a lot more useful because I can deploy them out multiple times and change the host names as I need or change other characteristics of them as I require. Keep that in the back of your mind because we're going to see more of this in a second. Within this OS profile, then, I can change my roles and features here. In this, I'm just going to install the remote desktop services role. I'm going to install the role services for the connection broker, session host, and for web access. Make sure I'm putting myself in my correct domain, in this case, and then hit the next button. And that, essentially, is what I'm doing up until this point. Once I get to this point, the next step in the VMM process for creating this machine tier is adding any applications into that server. Anybody here heard of a technology called AppV? Right? Did you know that there's a special version of AppV called Server AppV that's included in VMM for free, or well, as part of your VMM license? Server AppV allows you to deploy AppV packages directly into a server at the moment that it's deployed. You can also, with these, deploy web packages. So if I have a web package that someone's been working with on another server, I can encapsulate that up into a zip file and deploy that back out. So the ability to add these applications in at the moment I generate the machine becomes really useful. But who here is using AppV? A couple of people. You liking it? It's good for what it's good for. It's got its issues in certain places. What I have here is a way to incorporate applications into a delivered machine. But Microsoft got smart. And they said, you know what? In addition to incorporating those changes into virtual machines, why don't we also allow you to essentially run any command at all during the deployment of the machine? What kind of commands could I then run? WMI queries, batch files, VBScript. Sorry, didn't mean to say that. Pascal, Fortran command. Okay, PowerShell commands. We can run PowerShell commands on this thing. And so PowerShell has now, I mean, we've played, hopefully you've played with PowerShell and realized that PowerShell can allow you to essentially instruct a machine to do pretty much anything you want these days. Well, the combination of batch commands, the combination of shell commands, the combination of PowerShell commands are those that you can use here inside of VMM to continue the build of this machine as it gets deployed. Microsoft refers to them as generic command executions, or GCEs. It's not a great name, but I guess it's better than stuff you run when machine gets deployed. They must have like a naming department, you know? So GCEs are generic command executions. And what these GCEs are is exactly what I said. They can perform certain activities. In the case of deploying out your first server in that initial server tier, there are five that are important. The first one reboots the machine. The second one reboots the machine again, just to be sure. And notably, that the reason why this is in here is because in my testing, I could not get the thing to work reliably if I only reboot once. So I put the second one in there. It's yours to keep. I'm hoping that that gets fixed. Now, you know as well as I do, when you deploy the RDS roles, specifically session host role, you got to reboot the box anyway, right? When you click to create a deployment, it's going to reboot that session host. So you're essentially just finishing up the installation here. Well, after I do those reboots, I've got to go through the process of interconnecting all the roles, right? Because I set in the OS, in the operating system profile, that I want to install the RDS role services. Well, I need to finish the job, right? I need to logically go through that series of steps that connects the things together. That's what I have down here as the fourth and also the fifth item in this series of commands. The first creates an RDS deployment. The second creates an RDS collection. And it is the combination of that deployment and collection that ultimately allows you to begin delivering applications out to your users. Yay! Is this like awesome? Is this like a yay moment? Yeah. It should be. Let's hear applause for me. As a presenter, you can do that. I feel so valid. So what are we doing? I am including these steps in here so that when you go home, you can go find this this presentation later on and then literally just replug in all the information. Again, I promised you something that you can immediately deploy when you get home. So you'll notice here that in the first pre-install script, this first pre-install script has a deployment order of one. It runs the command, and this is hard to see in the back, I apologize, but it runs the command cmd.exe, which we all know is the command prompt, and then runs as parameters the /q/c switch to essentially run this quietly, and then shutdown with the /r and then /t0 commands. Right, so I'm just invoking shutdown from the command line. Then I do it again here in step two. Right, this is again just to ensure that those role services get installed correctly. Now the third step in this process is a little trick that gets the PowerShell execution policy switched to bypass mode because the restricted mode pops up with a little error message, or a little are you sure message, the yes, no, are you sure message. And all I'm doing here is running PowerShell.exe with the dash command switch to set the execution policy to bypass, and then with the force switch. All this sets things up to get me to step four, which is where I end up creating the RDS deployment. Now, what am I doing? That's what I'm doing, because I know that was really tiny a while ago. What I'm creating here is an execution of this command, which is PowerShell.exe. This is the 64-bit version of PowerShell. And then I'm instructing it with the command switch to run the commandlet new RD session deployment. The switches that a new RD session deployment requires are one for connection broker, one for the web access server, and one for the session host. Now, does anybody notice what's sitting behind those switches? Another variable. VMM has built into it about a half a dozen or so built-in variables that become very handy when you're performing these kinds of activities. One of which is at computer name at. This resolves to the fully qualified domain name for the computer that you have defined earlier on in this entire process. So at computer name at gives you the ability to say, all right, well, this is the computer name that I'm creating. Go ahead and make it the connection broker. Go ahead and make it the web access server and make it also the session host. Pretty impressive. It gets more exciting. The next step here, step five, is creating a new RDS collection, which involves a very similar commandlet, again running PowerShell and running the new RD session collection command, commandlet, and also setting the collection name, session host, and connection broker. These two are set to computer name, but as you can see here, look what I've done. I've created another custom variable called collection name. Now, if you've ever played with RDS before, you know that in order to create an RDS deployment and collection in Server 2012, you have to name the collection. Right? You've got to give it some kind of name. The collection is what is the boundary of all the applications that you're delivering out to different people. Right? So when someone goes to your web access server, whatever applications are built into the collection is what they're going to see in that website. All I'm doing here is giving them access to that collection name. With those in place, I then complete the wizard here, and that creates here in the service template our initial server tier. Pretty impressive, huh? Now I've got to create this scale out tier also. Right? And this will make more sense as we sort of move a little further into this presentation, but I want to create another tier that allows me to add additional terminal servers to this environment whenever I see fit. In order to do that, you'll notice I'm making some very important changes here to the second machine tier as it gets created. Check these out. One of the first two things that I did was change the preferred deployment order and preferred servicing order from 1 to 2. Why would I do that? Why would I want this to be at a deployment order of 2 instead of 1? Because I don't have a farm yet. I've got to build the farm first and then add this server into that farm as another machine in the farm. When I do that, when I create this as the next tier, I can then check the checkbox here that says this machine tier can be scaled out. Now, in all of your research on either Bing or the other search engine, when you've looked at all these web services and they talk about the scale-out ability of everything, right? The only service really that you can scale out in a web service is what? Your web servers, right? Very difficult to scale out your database servers because of all the clustering weirdness that goes on. Same thing with the app servers. Well, you can scale out your RD, or your remote desktop servers in this case, because each one is essentially a replicant of the one before. In a remote desktop collection and deployment, the idea is that every server looks like every other server because they're all intended to be load balanced with each other. When I scale out this tier, I can provide what I want the default instance count to be, so 1 to start out with, and then what I want the minimum and maximum instance counts to be as well. How far do I want to allow myself at the most to scale this out, and then later back in? Any questions about that? This is awesome. The bottom box here is one that, thanks to a very good friend of mine, Yung Chow, he explained what that checkbox was. As you can imagine, whenever I'm adding all these additional servers in, there comes times sometimes I don't want to remove them so much as just maybe reboot them or add updates, but essentially bring a little bit of downtime to some of the machines in that tier. This final checkbox adds a bit of logic into VMM to say, I want to ensure that at least one of these servers is always available when I'm going through those update or when I'm going through those reboot activities so that I never end up with a service outage based off of the activities that I'm doing. That availability set means that you're never going to be down when you go through rebooting things. Useful checkbox because now you don't have to worry about which servers you're taking care of. You can just let VMM handle this process for you. And it will go through patching, for example, the Hyper-V host And you don't have to worry about any of these virtual machines end up going down or the entire service going down. Make sense? So excellent question. In this service, in order just to keep things simple for our purposes here, decided to stick with a simple single connection broker instance. In your case, the easiest thing to do in the initial tier is just to create two servers in that initial tier and then run whatever PowerShell is necessary in order to create that highly available connection broker. Because then your scale out tier in this case just becomes more instances of terminal services. Does that make sense? I actually wanted to do that for this, but it just started to get really complicated, and I wanted to keep things as simple as possible for people, because I really wanted to get through all of this in that 75 minutes if possible. So when I'm building this scale-out tier, I've got a couple of steps that I have to go through in configuring this machine, right? I've got to go through and reboot it. I've got to reboot it or reboot it again. I've got to set that PowerShell execution policy to bypass. But because this is the second deployment, right? This is the additional server deployment. There are going to be a couple of PowerShell commands that are different. I'm not creating a new deployment in this instance. I'm adding a host to a deployment. And so the PowerShell changes. Instead of being new RD deployment, it's add RD server. Instead of being a new RD collection, it's add RD session host. Now, what's great about these is, again, notice how in this I'm referencing my previous variable here for collection name. I'm referencing my initial server host name that I supplied when I named that server way back in the very first part of this demonstration. So this illustrates that I can actually use these variables in all kinds of locations, even inside of scripts, because they will be resolved by VMM at the moment that they're created or executed. Okay, make sense? The ultimate goal here, or the ultimate result, is in creating that second tier. And here it is. Here we have the service that I showed you just earlier on. I have an initial host tier, right, with one server that's running RD Web Access, it's running the connection broker, and then I have the scale-out tier here. Last year it was rain, this year it's the door alarm. That I then can deploy. When I deploy it, I set up the settings here for my collection name. I set up the name I want for my RD first host name, hit the deploy button, and after a few minutes, I end up having exactly what I'm looking for. A service that includes all the bits that I can deploy by clicking one button. What do you think? Question? That's why we set the deployment order to two instead of one. That allows me to ensure that that first one gets completed and all it's gone through all of its steps before the second one ends up being completed. Oh, it's like as if you were looking forward in the slide deck. The $5 I owe you, I'll get you after this session. Yeah. Yeah, you guys don't put half a gig of RAM on all your session hosts? So, and one proc. Now, I'm not done here. He's leaving anyway. I'm not done here because I haven't showed you really, I've showed you the initial bit of automation, and I've showed you how to make a really, really, really complicated terminal server, right? But you might be asking, why would I go through all of that effort? Right? Why wouldn't I just build it myself? Why wouldn't I mean, that's great that I can just hit the button and deploy out an RDS environment, but I could do this with Ghost pretty easily or some other solution. I could right-click and copy from a template from my VMM or from my RDS template to create a new machine whenever I wanted. This seems like a lot of extra effort for not that much benefit. But remember what I showed you. What I showed you was not just the ability to generate an RDS service when I wanted to. I told you that we were creating a service that I could generate whenever I wanted to, rebuild whenever I want to, and also scale it out when that snowstorm happens. Or scale it out when the boss comes to me and says, you know what, I was in first class on this flight, and I know we've been dealing in sprockets for a long time, but you know, I think we're getting into the cogs business. You've experienced this, right? Guy sitting next to him decides to get into some new line of business, and suddenly it's your job to get 40 new servers online by next week. This is hard to do. But if I have enough resources in my cloud or in my virtual environment, and I'm prepared for it, I have the ability to put in another 20 terminal servers at half a gig of RAM apiece, or whatever. However I would normally create these things. I build these in this way because what I'm looking for is the ability to scale out that service. Remember, we created this service so that when I click the button, all the pieces are assembled correctly at the very moment the button gets clicked. That button can be the button that creates the new service. That button can also now be the button that scales it out. Anybody here played with VMM and looked at that button and thought, gee, that's nice? Right? Oh, that's great. I'd love to be able to scale that out, but in order to scale it out, I'd have to go through all this effort. Right? Well, I just showed you how relatively easy it can be to create a service to be scaled out. When you click this button here, here's what happens. Clicking that button brings up a little wizard here that defines what you want your machine to be. Now, I skipped over this a little bit, but you'll notice that it's generated a numerical value, RDSH01, for this virtual machine. I used another variable name in generating the scale out tier. I called it RDSH pound, because the use of the pound character allows VMM to just deploy whatever the next number is in the series. In this case, I'd done some additions and deletions, so the next number happens to be number one. But this will automatically generate out that RDSH whatever based on the definition that was created in that service template. Right? So the snowstorm happens, oh, no problem, click. We got the services we need. Is this impressive? So, all right. Greg, you're telling me that when the snowstorm happens, that's all fine and dandy, but you know, from time to time, I want to go on vacation, and I like to ski. So when the snowstorm happens, I don't want to be sitting around waiting for the 20 minutes it takes to spin up a new virtual machine, because I'd rather be on the slopes. Well, why not automate the scale out? And it's now, after some 40 minutes or so, that we're finally getting into some of the central tenets behind private cloud computing. Remember what I told you before, that private cloud is not a technology? It's a way of thinking. Well, the thinking involves automation. And that's what all these pieces of System Center are designed to do. Pieces like Operations Manager, which, if you play with Ops Manager, can look and monitor for the behaviors in a system. I can take a look at the utilization and say, you know what, when the utilization hits a certain number of users, why don't I just create another RDS server? I got 50 users on that server. You know what? 50 users, when things start to go south, why don't you just automatically create a new one? Well, when that happens, I can use another tool like Orchestrator to monitor Operations Manager to watch for the alert that it's looking for. And when that alert happens, Orchestrator can say, you know what? Go ahead and scale out that service. In fact, the solution begins to become more integrated the more of these pieces of System Center that you end up incorporating together. So, here's Operations Manager, right? And with Operations Manager in place, and with the connector between Operations Manager and VMM in place, Operations Manager will automatically, without any effort on your part, construct a service model based on all the elements that you've included in your service template in VMM. I didn't have to do anything to create that, what you just saw. I had to do nothing because it just grabbed all the characteristics out of that service template and populated it into VMM. I can then use VMM to create my own monitors, right? So if the monitor doesn't exist, I can create my own monitor that can look for, I don't know, too many RDSH users being on a system. There are all kinds of monitors that exist in Operations Manager, and if you haven't had a chance to play with them, they're really impressive. Right, built into the RD, what is it called? The RD session host server target there is a performance monitor, or I can insert into that management pack a performance monitor that, for example, would take a look at terminal services sessions. So if I look at a sample computer there, interrogate it for the possible perfmon values I would look for, and say, you know what, I want to know when the total number of sessions on a 15-minute interval, when that total number of sessions is greater than, I don't know, 50 users. Because I know that when the total number of sessions is greater than 50 users, things just start to get a little squirrely on that terminal server. 50 users on a half a gig, right? Very, very slow. When that happens, go ahead and pop up an alert here. It says, you know what, there's too many RDSH users. Pop that alert right up in Operations Manager, and immediately I have the ability to know when I've got a condition that is going to create a problem. Before that problem begins to impact users, I can take advantage of something. I can do it, perform some activity. I love the alarms. Those activities can then be further automated with the help of System Center Orchestrator. Anybody here play with Orchestrator at all? We hear it, one person, two person, three person. And the rest of you, put your heads down. If you have Orchestrator, spend some time with it. You know what Microsoft's like secret internal nickname for Orchestrator is? They call it the glue. And it's called the glue because with Orchestrator, you can connect Orchestrator to all the other disparate components of System Center and your machines themselves and do things based off of what you see, information you see in one component, do things in another. Like, for example, look at an alert that appears in Operations Manager and based off of that alert, then perform some action in VMM. It's actually relatively simple to do, too. Here, I drag literally one icon over into the workspace. That icon says, monitor for an Ops Manager alert. When that Ops Manager alert happens, I want to monitor for the alert titled, I got too many RDSH users. Uh-oh. When that occurs, just like with PowerShell, I then create a pipeline to something else, the next step in this process, which in my case would be another icon I drag over from VMM that says scale the tier out. Here I make a connection to VMM. I tell it, all right, well, what service am I interested in? This is my RDS service. And then what tier am I interested in, the scalable tier? When I'm done with that, I hit the finish button, check in this, or connect the two together, and then check in the runbook. Light up the runbook, and now this runbook is constantly monitoring for that Ops Manager alert that I created. When the Ops Manager alert finds out that I've got too many users, it's going to run this runbook and automatically scale the tier out. What do you think of that? It gets better. So automatically scaling the tier out anytime anything happens is great, but this VM sprawl problem is a big deal, right? Well, scaling it in then becomes something that we want to do as well. And here's where things get a little hard. And don't worry, I'm going to give you some code that you can play with if you want to do this back whenever you get home. There is a scale in icon in Orchestrator that lets you scale it in. But the scale in icon in Orchestrator with this version, so with 2012, I don't know much about R2 to be able to tell you for that, but the scale in icon does not have any workflow surrounding it that allows me to do anything other than delete the VM. Now, when was the last time that you, I don't know, deleted a domain controller by accident? Right? What does it do? It causes problems. It leaves lingering objects in Active Directory database. When was the last time you deleted an RDS server, a terminal server, out of a terminal server farm? Same kinds of lingering issues. So here's where you can use tools like PowerShell and tools like System Center Orchestrator to clean up the activities as it comes time to scale things in. This is a nifty little PowerShell script that is by no means the most elegant script out there. And so if you are a PowerShell guru, you know, that's not the point of this. The point of this script is very simply to define a set of variables, to use those to import in whatever commandlets I need from RDS and from VMM, to use those to identify what my connection broker server is, ask that connection broker, give me the name of one of the RDSH servers, just give me the last one because I don't care, and then clean it up and throw it away. That's the whole point behind this. And with that, inside of Orchestrator, I can create now a monitor alert to say, hey, I'm looking for, there's too few users on my RDSH servers. When that happens, go ahead and execute this command. If you're later on, whenever you are using this back in your own environment, this is the code for your copy and pasting pleasure. But that's essentially how you can scale this thing back in. Thoughts about that? Questions? Awesome. Question? The variables here at the top? These variables, so the question he asks is where are we reading these variables from? And there absolutely is a way to pass variables from VMM into the PowerShell script. I just elected not to do that here, again, just for simplicity, but there is a way to pass them through. You'll have to go search to find it, because that becomes handy when I choose to do the deployment. I can just punch in the information and it'll end up essentially flowing its way all the way through down to this PowerShell script. You're exactly right. Excellent question. I'm sorry? And your point is very astute as well. Again, in attempting to create a simplistic solution, there's a lot of logic here that you'll probably want to add in the real world. His question was, what if there are users on this machine? And if you think about it, built into Orchestrator is going to be the ability to, you know, query RDS for is there users, or to turn on drain mode. If it's not built into Orchestrator, there's very simple PowerShell commands that you can execute just like this one inside of Orchestrator, so that your workflow becomes monitor, turn drain mode on, monitor for zero users, remove RDS. This Orchestrator tool, I swear to you, is going to revolutionize everything about how you do things, because once you can create that logical connection between all the different actions that you need to occur, you're not going to have to do any work anymore. And that's what we're really looking for, right? Well, maybe not that. It'll be like automating yourself out of a job. No, that's not right. So, other questions? In the back. Excellent question. Does all this work with VMware hosts? The neat part about VMM and how it's been constructed is that VMM is designed to be a nice, covering, warm, fuzzy blanket that layers over the top of whatever hypervisor you choose. So whether this is a VM host, a VMware host, whether this is a Citrix Zen server host, whether this is a Hyper-V host, it doesn't matter. Because I'm not interested in the hypervisor. I'm interested in all the resources that the hypervisor exposes to me. Again, that's that private cloud thinking as opposed to virtualization thinking. Others? Yep. No, all of that gets much easier in 2012. Much, much easier. Good question, though. And so there's my creation of that whole notion of private cloud elasticity. Here's an example of how it looks, right? So let's say that, oh no, we've got too many RDSH users. Let me refresh things here really quick. We have too many RDSH users here in Ops Manager. Let's do something. Well, back in Orchestrator, that Orchestrator runbook is now executing. And after a very short period of time, you'll notice that the status of my RDS scalable is set to deploying. And it just popped up. That additional host is now being automatically created because I know that I need to create that. Awesome, huh? Quiet. Quiet. Now that's, you have no idea how hard I tried. Because you do film these out of order, you know. But yes, there is some non-sequential numbers there. Just ignore the fact that the numbers don't match. It takes 10 VMs in order to do this, because you've got to have a separate VM for Orchestrator and Ops Manager and VMM and your database and all that stuff. And rather than trying to carry, a very large server on the plate, I figured I'd film it. And I don't want to be one of those presenters that's like, oh, my demo doesn't work. Don't you hate those? Back in the old days, they told you never film your demos, but these days, it makes it way easier. It's like, ooh. Cut that last comment out of the recording. So you might be asking at this point, you know what, Greg, what you're telling me is that I should start with this really, really basic, right out of the box instance of Windows. Right? And so with this basic right out of the box instance of Windows, how many apps are on that instance? Notepad, calculator, Paint. Now, does anybody here use any applications in their environment at all from companies other than Microsoft? Raise your hand. That was a joke, by the way, guys. I actually have one client that doesn't, which is really crazy, but they use all Microsoft products. I don't know how they do it. But we all use other apps, right? We have to, other apps that we have to deal with. But I told you that you're using a copy of the OS that's right off the DVD. How do I get the apps delivered? Aha, remember those down there at the bottom? Remember those three additional pre-install 6, 7, and 8 things that I sort of glossed over? Well, those are there because and you can do this however you want. Because maybe when I deploy out my remote desktop services servers, maybe I've got some of these applications perhaps, I don't know, packaged. Maybe I've got Configuration Manager installed in my environment. So the sixth item in this series of items is to go and silently install the Configuration Manager agent onto this RDS host. And with that RDS agent, or with that Config Manager agent installed onto this host, then I can, and that's the command line, or the command syntax for it. You'll see the variables there for defining what my Config Manager host name is associated with my MP, which is my management point, and my Config Manager site code, and my host name for my failback status point. I can use variables there to make this really nice and easy. I can also, if I want, install the appv agent for RDS as part of this silently, because maybe I've got some appv applications I want to deploy out to this RDS host. And I can even go as far as to request the Config Manager client policy to speed up slow-moving software so that it ends up on my machine that much faster, the result of which is that remote desktop services and private cloud are better together. Thank you very much. You guys, thank you very much for the chance to talk to you. I'll be up here for questions for the next couple of minutes. And if you want to visit with me, I'll be down at the CBT Nuggets booth a little later on. Again, all of this is based off of a couple of those CBT Nuggets series. So thanks so much. Have a good day.